welcome to the Cowboy Chronicles. I am Scott Wright of the Oklahoman. This is the post-scrimmage slash practice slash Saturday event podcast coming to you after Oklahoma State's spring finale, spring exhibition, whatever you want to call what happened inside Boone Pickens Stadium today. I am Scott Wright, as I mentioned, joined by Jenny Carlson and Barry Trammell, who were at the stadium with me to cover this whole event. All the different things we saw, from 1-on-1 to 7-on-7 to 11-on-11 and everything in between. So a unique setup, a different kind of day. Anything that jumps out at either one of you, and Jenny, we'll start with you, that you actually learned from the events of the day?
Yeah, it was definitely tough to gauge. I mean, we've talked about this before, Scotty, and just how difficult spring, even if you play a spring game, I mean, you can sometimes be hard-pressed to tell much, because if you're splitting squads, then, you know you're not looking at the units as they would actually be on a fall Saturday. You know, if you're looking ones versus ones, you might get a taste, but are they really showing the blitzes that a defense would show, you know, in the fall? Would the offenses be really throwing open the playbook? Probably not. So, you know, it's really hard to tell even in those normal settings. So today was even more difficult, but we did get to look at the quarterbacks. We did get to look at the receivers. And, you know, one thing I learned, I think this quarterback battle's pretty tight. I mean, I know it was one practice, but boy, I didn't see a ton of separation between those two guys. And I think the other thing I learned was that CJ Moore is an interesting character at receiver. I think he's going to be an interesting contributor there potentially. So past that, I'm not sure I learned a whole ton.
Barry, anything else to add to what we learned today?
I actually learned they could make it bearable.
Yeah.
Making me watch a football practice. I enjoyed some of the drills as long as it had a ball in it. I mean, I'm not going to sit there and watch the linemen beat each other's heads in and crash shoulder pads. That doesn't do anything for me. But the 7-on-7 drills, the 1-on-1 drills with the deep balls, I thought that was interesting. And the two-minute warning, they had a two-minute warning drill. I enjoyed that because that was real football.
Yeah.
Even when they did the scripted scrimmage, there was no down-to-the-ground tackling.
Right.
So that's always a bummer. But it was enjoyable. Now, if they'd had to do this when Mason Rudolph was the quarterback, it would have been insufferable because, you know, Mason Rudolph's going to be the quarterback, so what difference it make? But it was fun to get to see Drew Brown and Spencer Sanders. I mean, these are mystery men.
Yep.
Been talking about them for almost, or longer than 12 months. They've been on campus almost that long. And outside of that, as you've said, just that Liberty Bowl handoff, that's all we've seen. So it was fun to see those guys.
Yeah, it was. And Jenny, I'm with you. I don't think that there was any major separation. I didn't really expect there to be. Not necessarily set up for somebody to really thrive or lose the job necessarily. But you know, we got to see them make a lot of different kinds of throws, and that made it I think enjoyable for the fans. Probably I think Mike Gundy was maybe more right than I expected him to be, even in his gauge that this was going to be a fan friendly event, because I do think that was you know, they had I think some 1-on-1s going on between the receivers and DBs. While the inside drill, the you know, all the linemen were going to, at it on the other end, so that that helped out. If there had been, like Barry said, if there had been a significant period of just watching linemen, you know, hitting each other and not really knowing a ton about what's going on, that could have got that could have slowed things down. But it moved at a good pace, and the quarterbacks were rotating in and out. We got to see a little bit of even Brendan Costello and Sean Taylor, the backups. And that, you know, get an idea of what those guys can do. So, now Jenny, you mentioned CJ Moore. I'm guessing, but feel free to disagree with me, anybody that wants to, the star of the spring scrimmage, / practice.
Yeah, for sure. I think he definitely, opened some eyes to what he could potentially do for the Cowboys. You know, obviously the depth at receiver, I mean, it's an annual discussion, but It's even more a fact of the matter, and that we found out today that LC Greenwood, a guy that, you know, looked like he was maybe going to make some pushes to get some pretty significant playing time, This next fall, he's moved to linebacker by his choice. He went in and asked to play linebacker because he felt like there might not be enough opportunity at wide receiver. So that tells you the depth of that position. But, you know, CJ Moore, very thin. And if he's added 30 pounds, I'm almost scared to see how thin he was when he showed up on campus because he's still pretty slight. But tall, good hands, made some competitive catches. You know, Mike Gundy said after the scrimmage practice thing that he thought CJ Moore was probably still a year away from being a 55 to 60 play sort of guy at receiver just because of his frame essentially. But it sounded like they feel like that he's a guy that can definitely give him some plays out there. And at his size, his height, I think that's going to be really interesting to see what he can bring to the table.
And then you factor in other guys like Patrick McCoffman, who is 6'6", and showed that he's improving from that torn ACL. Jelani Woods as a tight end, 6'7", and weighs almost 270 pounds now. He said he has sort of reworked his body a little bit to get more prepared for the beating that he has to take when he goes down and blocks. He's feeling a lot more comfortable in my conversation with him afterwards amid the fans. Barry, the number of playmakers around these quarterbacks has to be an exciting factor for either one of them. Whoever wins the job, they've got to be pretty pumped about the offense that they're taking over.
Yeah, although, I mean, when you think about Chuba Hubbard and Tylan Wallace and Dylan Stoner, but I found it interesting when Gundy was talking about the outside receiver spot. I think Jacko asked him about Tyron Johnson, you know, going pro, and Gundy expressed some concern about they really don't have anybody there that's done much. So I thought that was interesting because you sort of always, whenever I don't even think about OSU receivers, what do I care? Whoever they run out there is going to be good, and some of them are great.
Right.
But so do you think it's legitimate concern by Gundy at that spot, or is he just talking?
I mean, there's some concern that you don't know what these guys are right now. You don't know what they're going to be like on a Saturday night in Corvallis, but I think that the talent that they've got. I mean, there's a reason that LC Greenwood felt like he was had hit a dead end at receiver. He saw writing on the wall in some form or fashion, and you know Patrick McCoffman is a guy that they really like. But, you know, he redshirted 1 year and then he tore his ACL whenever he was really kind of starting to come along last August. And so he's been around for 2 years but hasn't seen the field at all yet. So there is an unknown. And, you know, I think that they've got some things that they would like to do and use those guys a little bit differently. Dylan Stoner getting more involved, doing some other things to make sure that their best players are getting the ball. I think that the way they're going to use the Cowboy back this year is going to be a lot different, not just with Jelani Woods. You know, we didn't even see Larry Joubert take the field at that position. He's obviously going to be more of a blocker, being a guy that is moving from an offensive guard spot. But they're going to do things differently with him that we haven't seen. So, you know, I don't see a reason to be greatly concerned about that position. It's not – they don't have an experienced guy like Tyron Johnson out there. But they've got guys who I think are going to be able to make plays. Jenny?
Yeah, and it seems to me like they're just – it's not going to be one guy. It's going to be a multiple option at that outside spot. I mean, you might throw a speedy guy like Stoner out there, a play or two. Then you might throw a gigantic option like Jelani Woods out there, a play or two. You know, Gundy said that McCoffman – What? You know what? What I'm about to say is what I need to do when I say Patrick McCoffman's name and just say it and don't think about it. But when Patrick does not think about that knee and that brace,
yes,
Gundy made the point that he sort of frees himself up to make plays and do some things that you're like, oh, but he's still wearing that brace. Gundy said it's a matter of continuing to strengthen that knee before he clears himself to get out of the brace. You know, when that happens is anybody's guess. But, you know, when you're carrying around something that extra heavy on one leg, it's going to remind you of it a lot. So mentally, he's just not quite there yet. But I think that it's going to be a situation where they, you know, may not have a guy like Tyron Johnson or before him James Washington who played 90% of the snaps at that position. It may be more of a 33%, 33%, 34% type of situation at outside receiver. And, yeah, I mean, maybe that doesn't make Gundy feel great that he doesn't have an obvious guy there. But, frankly, the various looks that a guy that guys could give a DB over there, whew, that's tough to think you're chasing Dylan Stoner one moment and then trying to guard 6'8", however tall Jelani Woods
right.
is. That's all. That's a mess to try to handle over there. And you got to figure that's the second best DB for the opponent because they got to put their best guy on Tylan Wallace.
Yeah, exactly.
Gundy talked about Jelani Woods. I hope he does become a weapon because a 6'8" tight end who's got some ball skills since he's been a quarterback all his life, that would be there's a lot of times you can just say, hey, take three steps and turn around. Here comes the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an easy way to make 4 yards. And, you know, 4 yards isn't flashy, but sometimes you need 4 yards. So I hope that progresses the way Gundy seemed to indicate that it would.
What did I say to you, Scotty, before we went down on the field? How many balls would be a reasonable number for
right.
Jelani Woods?
Right.
How many targets?
Yeah.
And I think I threw out 5.
Yes.
I mean, that doesn't seem out of the question to me. And
not at all.
I think this is a guy that if he's really progressing the way that it looks like he's progressing, I mean, this is an NFL talent with his body. And as Barry said, the ability to catch the ball after playing quarterback all his life, he's a fascinating, fascinating piece to me.
Absolutely. And, you know, he's a guy that this offensive staff, I think, trusts a lot. If we go back to the Baylor game last year, when they needed a first down right at the end of the game that would have actually won the game before they ended up turning the ball over to keep that late drive alive, it was a play designed to go to him. Now, it wasn't maybe the best play for the situation. It took a long time to set up and develop, and he had to deal with some traffic getting across the field to try to get open, and the play didn't work out. But it was a fourth down play, and they needed to make something happen, and they went to him. They designed a play to go to him. So they feel comfortable with what he can do, and we're just going to see him continue to emerge and become a better player as he learns everything that goes into the position that he's playing. Now let me ask this, going back to CJ Moore really quickly, spring scrimmage star, blessing or a curse?
I don't remember enough to comment about OSU's recent history.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, a curse.
Yeah.
In general, a curse.
Yeah.
Most places. It's, you know, if you're really good, they don't really want you exposed all that much. You know?
Right.
I don't know that Thurman Thomas was doing a whole lot of 170-yard spring games.
just going back to last year, Landon Wolf was the star of last year's spring game. So they're at least trending in the right direction.
Yeah, and didn't one – I mean, he didn't exactly, like, set the world on fire. But one year I remember Charlie Moore had a great spring game
yes.
for OSU. I mean, it tends to be a receiver for whatever reason at OSU. I mean – maybe that just shows the depth of receiver that they've got guys down the pecking order that can still make you go, whoa, this guy's pretty good in the
exactly.
spring game. But I mean, I think it's, he's such a young guy. If he was a fourth or fifth year guy and he was doing what he did today, you might say, well, that's the last time we see CJ Moore.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a second year guy. He's really just starting to come into his own and, you know, he's carrying, think about that. He's carrying around 30 more pounds. That's like, what, 25% of his previous body weight almost?
And
he's figuring out, like, what am I supposed to do with this? And he's only going to continue to add. He has to. So, you know, that's going to be a continuing, challenge for him in a good way. I mean, he's got to get bigger, and he's got the frame to carry it. So it's just a matter of sort of figuring out how you do stuff with extra weight. So, no, it looks like he's got the hands to and the instincts to make some stuff happen. So in his case, being a younger guy, I think it's a good thing.
All right. We'll step over to the defensive side of the ball briefly.
It's about dang time.
You fired up to talk defense, Barry?
How long have we been talking? 10, 15 minutes?
Yeah.
We've not brought up the name of the best player on the field today. We have not brought him up.
Tell me.
A.J. Green.
Yeah, yeah.
A.J. Green. He had two interceptions today.
He did.
So what a strength. You know, for all the talk about the defensive line makeover that OSU is going to have to go through, and it's going to be a culture shock, having those two veteran corners, Roe Williams and A.J. Green, two-year starters, both of them, about to start years three, what a comfort that's got to be for Mike Gundy when he lays his head down at night, knowing that those two guys are out there playing, and any team in the league would swap and would take those two as their corners. So the two picks by Green, you know, the one was pretty easy. Drew Brown just threw him the ball. But that fade route early in the 7-on-7, that was a nice play.
Spencer Sanders, yeah.
That was a nice play. So, you know, I really liked what I saw out of A.J. Green.
And it's such a rarity to see that two third-year starters at cornerback. It's really pretty wild to even try to contemplate the type of benefit that is, because there are so few instances where you can actually say, oh, here, look, here's what this team did when they had 2 3-year starters at corner. It's you know, and then you add in the experience that the young guys at safety got. I think that you know, we didn't get to see a ton that was really revealing about the secondary, other than A.J. Green making some plays and a couple other moments. But Jenny, your thoughts on the secondary in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was pretty solid. You know, we didn't get to see a ton of you know, live action where the secondary's having to react to a bunch of stuff going on. As you guys have mentioned, 1-on-1 drills and 7-on-7, so some level, but limited in the 11-on-11, limited in the 2-minute drill. But, you know, you didn't just see – there was only one instance I can think of where a receiver was basically just running free.
Yeah.
A very first play of the 2-minute drill that Spencer Sanders ran. I can't even remember who it was, somebody down the left sideline. Big play, as you might imagine, open, and he got space. I don't know if he got away from a DB or if somebody was supposed to come help from the backside, but really the only time I remember just clearly somebody busting free. So, you know, that's a good sign. And at that point, you know, I'm not sure. I can't even remember who would have been playing in the secondary at that point. It may have been a mishmash of, you know, ones and twos or you know, they'd already played a full 2-minute drill series against Drew Brown. So at that point, they're definitely running a little bit lower on energy, no matter who's out there. But at the same time, not having a bunch of guys running open, even in limited situations, I thought that was really positive and indicative of, you know, frankly, what we're talking about. You know, DBs that are experienced and a secondary that, you know, those guys, it was trial by fire. But we started to see, you know, some positive signs in the bowl game. Looks like Colby Peel can play. Malcolm Rodriguez was back out there after being hurt, you know, off and on throughout the second half of last season. So those guys look like ball players, and frankly, they're starting to round into a pretty decent unit, it seemed like to me.
All right, now I'll admit, because I've been talking up the defensive line rebuild as what I think is the biggest storyline of this spring, even bigger than the quarterback situation. I probably watched the defensive line closer than some people did, and I gotta admit, I came away a little bit impressed. I it's hard to tell.
Mike Scott was good.
Yeah, Mike Scott, I think, is the type of athlete that has a chance to be a really impactful player. The way that the way they're using guys, Israel Antoine lined up some as a defensive end in some of their three-man sets. Amadou Fofana did the same. You know, I think Brennan Evers and Cameron Murray are going to be serviceable guys at tackle, and both are young and inexperienced and are going to grow and continue to develop and have a chance to be really good in there. So, you know, I they're definitely inexperienced. This is obviously just a scrimmage, and you're not going full bore, but I felt like they played better than I expected them to. Either of you have a thought on that?
Well, I'll say this much, that one of Mike Gundy's biggest concerns, gripes, whatever, about his quarterbacks was them trying to freelance, essentially, and make plays when they should throw it away, you know, whether it's a scramble or, you know, they're backtracking in the pocket or whatever. If there wasn't some pressure coming from the front, those guys wouldn't have been in those situations to make mistakes that involve that kind of play. So, yeah, I mean, I think we're talking about a small sample size in a scrimmage, or I'm sorry, a practice situation, but still, and when you consider the fact that what we think is the other end hasn't even arrived on campus yet.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think that it's not perfect. It's not going to be perfect. You don't graduate as many guys as they had and it be fine right away. But, you know, as Mike said afterwards, you know, that if they can throw enough guys at it to keep them fresh enough to maybe have a little more in the tank, and maybe that evens some things out from time to time, you know, maybe they got a chance. I don't know. Barry, what do you think?
Oh, I'm a little concerned because I remember the old days when they were manhandled, you know, and that was really the problem with OSU's defense. And maybe they've reached the point where Rob Glass's off-season program, at the minimum, creates enough big and strong guys that they can at least stand in there and not get pushed around. And that's always good for something.
Mm-hmm.
But they've become accustomed to pretty good players there. And now to step down, it appears, I mean, I too like Mike Scott a lot. Antoine's a solid prospect. Junior from Bowling Green sounds – Bowling Green?
Yes.
Bowling – he sounds like a player. But it worries me. I'll say that. That line worries me.
That's fair. Still a lot of growth to be done. Like I said, this was still just spring, and there's a long way to go. I felt like there was a chance that they could get really kind of manhandled today, and that didn't happen. But so we'll see what direction they go. The offensive line obviously is going to be a work in progress as well. The guys on the interior are all back. Dylan Galloway did not play today at left tackle, so some changes coming there as well. So we'll see what the Cowboys look like in the trenches in August. But overall, I was surprised to see the defensive line create as much havoc as they did. I want to get to Tom Hutton really quickly, but
before I
knew
you
I
wanted
do,
to get to Tom Hutton.
Knew, you, I wanted to talk to him before we talked about AJ Green, but that got derailed. So, but before we get to Tom Hutton, anything else that stuck out to you guys? I always call it the most important thing I forgot. Anything at all? Is Tom Hutton the big lingering piece of fruit that's hanging, dangling for us at the end of this podcast?
Potentially. You know, I thought this was interesting and not important to the next season per se, but as has become the custom, a lot of past players come back for the spring, whatever they have, and they did this year. We saw Mason Rudolph, we saw Brandon Whedon. And I didn't realize until Mike Gundy said after the game that they did not have any sort of alumni group for past players until like 6 or 8 years ago. And, you know, now, and Gundy also referenced the fact that at one point he was having a recruiting meeting yesterday, and in busts Mason Rudolph and Marcel Aitman and Chris Lacy, and he's thinking, oh my gosh, what's going on? And it turns out those guys helped to make a great impression on the family he was talking to. Well, no kidding. They got three guys that have, you know, at least drawn an NFL paycheck to some extent, standing right there. A guy that, you know, played quarterback for 3 years for it. I mean, like, so to have that connection, you know, that, again, may not matter a hill of beans to what this team is next year, but to have those guys connected, I mean, that can help in your recruiting. That can help in your development of players, just the, you know, seeing those guys. I didn't realize that they really didn't have any of that until very recently.
Yeah, Rod Johnson getting some credit for developing that. It's that was important. Barry?
Well, I don't know exactly what Gundy's talking about in particular, because they've always had the O Club.
Right.
So maybe he means an organized football reunion, I guess, is what he's talking about.
Yeah.
In the same way that only, you know, that OSU now has a basketball reunion every summer.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, and actively involved in reaching out to people.
Because we've seen old Cowboys come back forever at spring games and other times.
Right.
So maybe talking about a particular organizational move.
And he was talking about apparently they have a golf outing and a dinner and some other stuff. So maybe there wasn't anything formal for those guys. And maybe now this is a way to sort of formally connect them to this weekend. I don't know. But, so what exactly that formality is. But still, I mean, I think when you're able to connect former players, that's never a bad thing.
And it was fun to hear Mason Rudolph, Allison – Gappa, the OSU studio, OSU
Orange
video
yep.
sideline reporter, staged a variety of. I really enjoyed interviews with some former Cowboys, and Mason Rudolph clearly is letting the NFL rub off on him because he's let his hair down a little bit. He didn't you do much of that when he was quarterback in the Cowboys, but he basically told Mike Gundy to get a haircut.
Yeah.
And everybody in the state of Oklahoma said, amen, preach it, brother. So that was fun. And Chris Lacy saying, I just came to see who's wearing 15. So, you know, a lot of good stuff. For not having a game, they made it pretty fun. So I sort of salute the Cowboys. Gundy talked about the lack of linemen, offensive linemen,
mm-hmm.
and why they really didn't want to split up and play a game. And I can understand that. He said he thought next year they would have the depth on both lines to go ahead and play a split up and play a game. So for not playing a game, I thought they ended up doing a pretty good job of entertaining the fans.
All right. Amid those things that that Mike Gundy did to entertain us, 7 minutes of punting with Tom Hutton. Jenny, your impression?
I was riveted. I honestly was. I was, and it. Obviously, we also got to see, is it Jake? I always screw up his first name.
McClure, yes.
Yeah, Jake McClure. I don't know why. I want to say Matt. There must have been a Matt McClure somewhere. Anyway, I don't know. I'm getting old and I forget stuff. But they both did some traditional punting, but they also both did the Aussie styles punting. And here's what I was fascinated by. We're going to have to investigate this, guys, because with the Aussie style, you know, normal punts are like a spiral. But these Aussie punts are doing end over end as they come into the guy's arms, which is more like a kickoff. But we all know how hard it is to catch punts because of the on-rushing, you know, offensive or team coming at you, the opponent's coming at you. Is it harder to catch a punt when it's also coming at you end over end?
Right.
I have no idea, but it was fascinating to watch, that's for sure.
Or just the sideways wobble that they would fire off from time to time, Barry?
You know, our old pal John Helsley offered up the theory that the spiral kick is harder to catch.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was bogus. If that was true, you'd throw passes end over end. So we'll see. I mean, he sounds like a fun guy. We won't get to talk to him for a year, so that's a year before we get to hear that Australian accent, which is a bummer. But
a year for you guys. I made my way around and...
did you talk to him?
I did not talk to him. He's off limits. I did not talk to him. I just...
You just listened.
I just stood around and listened while he visited with some fans that were asking for autographs.
Well, that's cool beans.
It was fascinating. He and Alex Hale, the walk-on, I guess probably third string kicker, who is also from Australia. They were hanging out and chatting together and taking some pictures together. And
well, now you have just shattered my world, Scotty. Let me ask a question.
Yeah.
I've never heard about Australian kickers.
Right, no.
Is that a thing?
I have no clue.
I know about punters. Punters are taking over the universe.
I haven't, as far as I know, you know,
well,
I talked
know,
to the
Trump's
guys.
Trump's got a plan. He's got an immigration policy to stop the infiltration of Australian punters.
Punters.
But I had no idea about the kickers.
No, this guy was, completely outside the box for Aussie kickers. I didn't, you know, even at Pro Kick Australia, the place that produced Tom Hutton and all these guys, they don't work on place kicking. And so I'm really fascinated to learn some more about this guy. He's still under the first year umbrella, having only arrived last August. So hopefully we get a chance to learn a little bit more about him later on in the year.
Is there any chance that he drop kicks his extra points?
That would be incredible. I would be all for it if that's what we've got going on. Sign me up to watch him do that, and then just visit with him about I don't know, shrimp and lobster or whatever else. I don't care.
Are there goalposts in Australian rules football? In other words, is there a pair of goalposts on the continent of Australia? That's my question, is really what I'm asking.
Yeah.
And
yes.
If there are not, well, that explains why there's no place kicking.
Right. Well, you know, they also play rugby there, so I think that there are goalposts in some form or fashion.
Clearly, we need to do some homework and possibly send somebody to Australia to look into this.
Well,
Scotty.
Listen, between that and going out to University of Hawaii to do an in-depth Drew Brown deep dive story, you know, my summer's going to be busy, but I'll see if I can work in an Australia trip.
I think
as well.
I think that could be sometimes referred to them, a 2-for-1 trip. Just go to Australia and stop in Hawaii on the way.
There you go. I think that sounds like an ideal work related trip to expense on my company card. Hopefully Ryan Sharp's not listening at this point. All right, guys. Anything else we need to touch on before we shut down this practice podcast?
Just I'm depressed because walking to the car, we were just talking with each other. I did the math and I figured out that we're closer to the Liberty Bowl in the past than we are to Oregon State in the future.
That's right.
So long, hot summer of no football still awaits.
That's right.
I'm also sad because, Scotty, I don't know if you just – I think you just said it because it's the first thought that comes to mind, but you said a Saturday night in Corvallis. Uh-huh. I'm kind of hoping for maybe a day game just because, you know, we need all the day games we can get for our deadlines.
I'm all for day games. I'm just betting against a Friday afternoon kickoff, that's all.
Yeah, that game's on Friday, so
– Well, even worse. Okay, never mind. Then it's got to be Friday night. Oy vey. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, so we'll see.
It's going to be late night.
Yeah, we'll see. There's, what did you say, Barry? 8 other games, about 6 others.
I think there's 6 other Power 5 games
decent
on that day. So it's a state of Oklahoma tradition. One of our teams goes to the state of Oregon. They play at 9:30 Oklahoma time. Are we not used to that with the Thunder and the Blazers?
Right. Yeah, we got another one of those coming up very soon. So.
Yeah, and I guess we'll have been in practice from this playoff series, but by then people are going to need to build up their tolerance to stay up again until midnight or 1 o'clock. So
yeah, they will have readjusted their internal clocks by that point. All right, Barry, Jenny, thank you very much for hanging out with me on the Cowboy Chronicles. Thanks to Paige and Dave, who always put this thing together and make it great. Make sure you're subscribing on Apple Podcasts. That way, whenever we fire this thing back up in the fall, you'll get them just delivered directly to your phone. You won't have to worry about going to find it. So make sure you're doing that. We really appreciate all of you listening, and catch you next time on the Cowboy Chronicles podcast.